Instagram model without having to pluck my mustache hairs first. You can just take your tiny robot out of your pocket and see that, no, I don't really have an interest in modern architecture. Or, if I'm pretending to, I can take 20 seconds to figure out which buildings I like best from the Googles and impress you with my ability to deftly copy and paste. Don't get me wrong, I am horrified by most of the internet, but I am happy it's there. Because having a beer with some kid you met on the internet isn't really a blind date. I mean, you've seen some blurry, far away, dimly lit pictures, haven't you? And you know she likes foreign films and quiet evenings cooking together at home, don't you? Well, then that asshole who won't text you back next week is not a stranger. Or is maybe less of one. At least you know that when you jump out of the Uber, they're not going to be like, "Oh, hi, are you the person the girl I'm supposed to be meeting brought along as her bodyguard?" I know my blog is hilarious, but I'm not that smart in real life. If you run up on me in the grocery store, you are going to be disappointed because, one, there is probably diet peanut butter in my cart, and, two, it sometimes takes a lot of staring at the wall in contemplative silence to come up with these jokes, and my off-the-cuff stand-up could use some work. And I'm pretty funny on Facebook, but you can erase and edit shit on the computer, then read it out loud to make sure you aren't embarrassing yourself before you post it. And if there is a machine that does this for you within casual friend gatherings, I will give you all my money to pick one up for me and leave it on the back deck and go the fuck away. I just want to G-chat about the hidden messages buried in the 160 misspelled characters that new dude you're dating just texted you. Not rub a palm full of almond oil into my skin at the end of the evening to loosen up all the silicones I piled on my enlarged nasal pores so you wouldn't know the toll 36 tumultuous years on this earth actually take on a human face after you make me talk about it at a restaurant. I just want to fast forward to the part of the relationship when I don't have to buy fancy bottled water in an attempt to trick you into thinking I really care about myself, or peel my body out of the overpriced underwear with an extra panel I bought to make this poorly chosen sweater dress look more appealing. At what point in this nascent friendship can I let my eyebrows grow back in and admit that I regularly cry to the animated version of Beauty and the Beast? Forget figuring out how many dates until it's appropriate to have sex. I want to know how many we have to get through before it's acceptable to stop. I don't want to talk on the phone. I just want you to text me. That way I can look at it and answer your question when my show is over. I once dated an asshole who, every single time I called, would immediately text, "Are you in a burning building?" No. If I were, and I still had the ability to breathe and see the numbers on my phone while choking to death on smoke, my first call would most certainly not be to a dude who says "library" and is afraid to try artichokes. There was a brief period in the mid to late 90s when all I ever wanted to do was call people on the phone. But, like the periwinkle stirrup leggings and snap crotch bodysuits I preferred at the time, dialing a person's telephone number in an attempt to have an actual conversation with him is now horribly outdated. I will never harass your ears with a list of the mundaneness of my day, nor will I expect you to pause The Walking Dead to try to string an interesting sentence together for my benefit. Before we were able to bore each other in person every day, Mavis used to call me at the end of each night. I would break out in a cold sweat trying to come up with a way to make Wednesday distinguishable from Tuesday. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. I mean, I just don't do that many things. I was living the same unremarkable life every single day, and trying to put a new outfit on Friday when it was exactly the same as Thursday was exhausting. How many times can I say, Brooke and I ordered hot dogs for lunch, and I read another chapter of Enter the Title of Any John Grisham Novel on the toilet? And I don't want to talk face-to-face either. That might even be worse. I can't play games on my phone if you're watching me. Tell me, when was the last time you had some soul-draining emotional talk with someone and came away from it feeling happy and secure and wanting to spend more time with the person who just berated you for 45 minutes about something you couldn't give a fuck about? Wait, scratch that. When was the last time someone came at you suggesting a talk and it turned out to be anything other than 45 minutes of being berated about something you couldn't give a fuck about? I have never, in any of my interpersonal relationships with women or men, proposed to sit down somewhere and have a talk. No one ever wants to sit you down and talk about something good, like how he or she should buy you more stuff. People want to trap you in an uncomfortable chair so they can go through the laundry list of your perceived crimes. And all you can do is sit there like a scolded child, nodding sadly in agreement that, yes, you are the literal worst. I'm not doing any of that. You'd have to trick me into a talk. If I was lucky enough to get a warning text, you would never see me again in your life. That is not a joke. The minute you say, hey, Herbie, we need to have a talk later, you can guarantee that my phone number will be changed by the end of the business day. Send me a follow-up email to reiterate that a conversation must absolutely take place, and I will be in witness protection by the end of the week. Can't I just apologize before you work yourself into a lather and save us all a bunch of nervous sweating? I swear to God, I'm really sorry for that thing I did, and I promise I will never, ever do that thing again, as long as you promise not to leave me any more anxiety-inducing voicemails. I'm depressed, man. Please don't ever leave me a voicemail. Lexapro has yet to cure the existentialist horror that is modern telecommunications. I see the voicemail notification pop up and am instantly consumed by dread. I mean, I didn't pick up, so you should know I'm not emotionally prepared to say words into a phone right now. Why make it worse by saying, dude, call me back, without specifying why or whether this is time-sensitive information? Like, literally, somebody better be dead. Or even better, the caller better be dead and calling from the grave to give me the info I'll need to collect that insurance. This is how murderers are made. I am a simple person. Kind of. I mean, I don't really have any dreams beyond comfortable pants and unlimited sparkling water. When I was little, I was never brave enough to declare what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do, because I grew up in the kind of situation where you just wanted to make it to the end of the week, or the next school day, or to graduation, or to work, or to the next paycheck, or to Red Lobster every once in a while to celebrate. I don't like to think more than a few weeks ahead. I just ride the least choppy wave and see where it takes me. I like to sit at home in mild terror as the world rages outside without me, hoping that no one is going to drop by and expect me to come up with a humorous anecdote or ask me to have an opinion on something. I like to get in the car and turn some funeral music up real loud, King Cruel, Mazzy Star, anything dark and brooding, and drive around looking at all the nature I don't want to get on me. I want to go to Walgreens and have the cashier pretend I wasn't just in there yesterday, buying the same exact shit. All I want is for the self-checkout at Target to be open. Is that a crime? I also just want to pay whatever the fuck things cost, without question, even if I think it might be wrong, and especially if there's a line forming behind me. Because arguing with someone who can smell you is embarrassing. I can feel my organs shutting down whenever I'm forced to stand behind a woman demanding 40 cents off a bottle of ketchup, despite the fact that she forgot her coupon at home. As if she is red-faced and raging at Mr. Hines himself, rather than Jonathan, who has to ride his bike home and write a book report after this. I will never be snappy with a waitress, or lose my mind on the phone with customer support, or make small talk with someone else's kid, because, honest to God, I would rather eat my own teeth than suffer any more humiliating human contact. I promise you that I will never ask the woman at the wine shop about her shiny new engagement ring, or wonder aloud about whether the pizza delivery man caught that flu that's been going around. I will smile politely at people walking their dogs, but I will never grab them by the arm and say, "Hey, what breed is that?" while they struggle to decide how to courteously answer my question with a steaming bag of shit in their hands. While I do appreciate a succinct elevator pitch, I am balls at delivering one effectively. Joanna, who owns the indie bookstore down the street from our crib, asked me the other day to give her the name of a good book I'd read recently. And, because I value her opinion, I stood in front of her for like 3 real minutes cycling through every book I've rated on Goodreads in the last 3 months, trying to determine which one would be the most impressive. I just stood there with my ears on fire, wondering if I should say A Little Life, because no one would think you were dumb if you made it all the way through a 700-plus page book. And I didn't. I did not make it through that book, because a quarter of the way in, this other book about teenagers in love that I wanted to read came out. So I abandoned the smart shit to spend an afternoon sobbing over a story about children I could have given birth to having sex. I went to a book lecture earlier tonight, and it took me 45 minutes of bewildering indecision to figure out what to wear just to sit in an audience in an indie bookstore next to your Aunt Jill and her second husband, Craig. Craig took copious notes the entire time, filling his battered moleskin with scribbles about how to structure a piece of short fiction, while I squirmed in a folding chair and wondered if the leave-in conditioner I'd used made my hair look dusty. Or was it too crunchy? I have a very specific textured look that I hope to achieve whenever I let my hair grow out, and maybe this new stuff I tried isn't working right. But now I'm stuck in a place where pulling out a mirror would definitely draw an inescapable number of eyes. Plus, it wouldn't be appropriate, and I pride myself on knowing things like when and when not to use the reverse camera in your phone to make sure your curls are popping, but not popping too much because you're going for a natural kind of thing. Frankly, none of the middle-aged white people in this room could explain what a C4 curl pattern is, but when you spend your life in a near-constant state of unease, details like that don't matter. This is the particular prison my anxiety has created. I can go and do the thing, and say the other things, but I gotta spend an hour wrecked because the only clean daytime pajamas I have available to me are the ones that don't do enough to conceal that crease in the upper arm fat under which my triceps are buried. Or trying to preemptively answer any question I might be asked by anyone. Or worrying that this is the kind of place where you have to actually interact with a person to get the key to the bathroom. A person who will be counting the minutes it takes for you to return with that key. A person with whom, once you cross the 6-minute mark, you will definitely have to construct an awkward joke to deflect from the fact that you just took a shit in their bathroom. My mind is a never-ending series of shame spirals. Do I have to go to that? And if I do agree to go to that, who else is going? In what capacity do these people know me? As an internet joke person, or as a sad real-life person who sometimes makes jokes. Sad people make not sad people uncomfortable, so I better think about smiling. Or will that be off-putting? If someone asks me a question while I have food in my mouth, how am I going to deal with that? Should I answer and cover my mouth and gross everybody out? Or sit there chewing for an eternity while they expectantly wait? Are the chairs sturdy at the restaurant? I better look the place up on Google Images. If they don't look sturdy, how do I tactfully suggest someplace else? OMG, remember that time I broke a chair? I wonder if anyone who was there still thinks about that time I broke a chair. When they get together and no one is paying attention to how much is on their plates because they are thin, do they ever bring up that time they got to watch as a cartoon fat person had to get up from the floor after she... I'm not going. I'm just not going to go. My nice clothes are not nice enough for this place, and I'm not sure whether there is enough money in my bank account to cover a dinner this extravagant. And what if my card gets declined? What if my card is rejected because I never signed up for overdraft protection? I thought you had to pay more, and I'm sure one of these people with good credit will cover it, but how will I be able to get up and walk out of that fancy restaurant since my face will be melted down the front of my shirt? Why do I feel embarrassed all the time, and why can't I figure out how to not do the things that embarrass me? Like pick good shirts I actually like, and sign up for overdraft protection, and look people in the eye when I talk to them, and just get over whatever is holding me back and ask the lady at the MAC counter in the mall how to correctly use concealer instead of walking around looking like a trash panda. We are never meeting in real life. This is Samantha Irby. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, Essays. This program was directed by Kim Smith. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2017 by Samantha Irby. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.